Hi, this is James White along with my co-host Corey Lynn, and this is the Solution Series brought to you by the Solera Report. And we're delighted to bring our guest on with you today, Jim Gale, who's got a wonderful story about food, about growing food, about abundance, about growing actual food, edible food in your garden. He's got a tremendous story, tremendous background. Jim, thanks so much for joining us here today on the Solution Series.
Well, thank you, James. Thank you, Corey Lynn, for helping spread the message. What I'm going to frame today in this show is the solution to all of the world's biggest problems, including the individual and the family, right? I'm going to frame it in a very logical way, which will inspire and empower your audience.
Well, Jim, before we get there, Jim, let's give us a little bit of background. You do have a very interesting background. I think if we can just go over that briefly, I think that's something that the folks would like to hear.
Awesome. So I grew up in Minnesota. My mom, who's actually here now, she had her first podcast an hour ago, which she grew up on a farm in southern Minnesota. When I was a kid, we would go home to the farm, and I would spend, those were the most incredible weekends of my life. They called me Nature Boy growing up. I just loved being outside in nature. And then when I was 19, I got into wrestling around 9, and that was a big deal. It was a major thing in my life. And around 19, I wrote my goals for the first time. This is very relevant because when we create and envision and feel an inspiring future, a future that brings us joy, that compels us to action, that's the first and most important thing we can do for ourselves and therefore our families and our world. So anyway, I wrote those goals and my coach laughed at me because he thought that they were impossible for me to achieve, which I thought was even more inspiring and motivating. And about 4 years later, thanks to writing my goals, I ended up being a four-time All-American and national champ. And again, it was because I wrote the goals. The 2 years previous to that, I sucked. I was actually written up in the state as biggest upset in state, and it was me losing to a guy that
cut out once at when you said you were a four-time All-American. What was it? Because it had cut out.
Oh, national champion.
Okay, awesome.
Yep. And the 2 years before that, I sucked, right? So a lot of times it's the pain and the struggles in life that really get us to asking new questions. And that's what's happening in our society, is we're having more struggles than we've ever had as a society. I believe, you know, history is written by the winners. So a lot of history is false, but this is, at least to written history, the most incredible apocalypse that we've ever had. Now, apocalypse simply means lifting the veil. It means becoming aware of what's going on and therefore becoming aware of new choices. It's a beautiful thing.
Yes, yes. And so you actually, I understand, I was actually watching a video the other day on the 52 acres, which you'll talk about. And you were talking about how you were doing very well and you had earned quite a living and then you lost everything and you got into this. So, and this, the food forest abundance is only, what is it, about a year and a half, 2 years ago you started this?
Yeah, actually we launched 14 months ago. And now I've been planning this and working towards this for 15 years. When I first in 2007 learned what was going on in the world, at the same time I learned permaculture. And permaculture, we'll get into permaculture throughout the talk. But when I learned permaculture along with what was happening, it put me down a rabbit hole of kind of fear and worry and concern because we're destroying our planet. And then my question is, what's the catalyst for this destruction? And that question, and then the question, if whatever the mind of man and woman can conceive and believe it can achieve, the question became, what can I conceive and believe for our world? And basically, that has been my obsession for 15 years. And the cool thing is that has led us to a very clear path to freedom.
Yes, yes. So now tell us all about the food forest abundance and what you're doing. And I love the whole blueprint concept. That's my favorite part.
Yes. Oh, the blueprint is the culmination of, you know, I built eco villages in Central America. And I learned so much about how to grow food and then the interaction of people, right? And this idea of building all sorts of new communities out in the world, that's just not logical, right? What we get to do to change the world is we bring the regenerative agriculture to the backyard.
Yeah.
When we turn, we've got 44 million acres of lawn in the United States. The lawn is the foundation of enslavement. It's the biggest mass brainwashing scam in the history of the world. It takes more poisons and more resources than any other crop, and it does not provide food. It's really ridiculous. When we turn 50% of the lawn into regenerative edible landscapes, that's when we reverse mass extinction, we reverse deforestation, we reverse cancer, heart disease, diabetes, we end hunger, and we end tyranny simply by doing what's best for us in our backyards.
I love it. And you know, what blew me away was when I first heard you talk about the lawns, it was one of those aha moments. That is not something I've ever thought about. And I've been covering the food industry for a while. That's astounding. And I said, it's genius. My God. And I'm looking around just my neighborhood going, why do we have all these? I mean, they're pretty trees. But why do we not have nuts growing or fruits growing, or what are we thinking? We've been completely brainwashed. You're so right.
Yep. And it's by design. 50 years ago, Kissinger said, if you want to control nations, control oil. If you want to control people, control food. And if you want to control the world's currency. Well, that wasn't just the ramblings of a madman. That was the strategy of the head of the World Economic Forum.
Right.
So, you know, Bill Mollison, this is what busted me out of my cognitive dissonance about 13 years ago, is that, you know, when you study the problem, it's icky. It's disgusting. It's incomprehensible that there are people that are destroying our world like this intentionally. So I read Bill Mollison's quote, though the problems of our world are increasingly complex, the solutions remain embarrassingly simple. And I started to bawl. And from that day forward, I tweaked my energy to focus on the solution, and that's what's led to here.
Jim, I would imagine. I'm sorry, Corey. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, James. Go ahead.
I would imagine your plans probably are probably tailored to different climates. Like, for example, there'd be a different gardening a map or a layout for a Florida, let's say, a home or a Florida piece of property than it would in Montana. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. So there's agricultural hardiness zones in everywhere. And what we first thing we do as permaculture designers is we look at what zone is the property in. And then we look at microclimates within the zone, right? You might be at the bottom of a big hill on the north side or the south side. That makes a huge difference, right? You can go one zone away just simply by being on the other side of a hill. Right. Or you might have water running through your property, or you might have a big rock, like one big black rock can change the dynamics of a property significantly. So that's what we do, is we look at all of the different elements and we find a way to stack the functionality of them by putting logical design to work.
Well, and what I especially love is, you know, because people such as myself that are very busy go, oh my gosh, how am I going to take care of all of this? But you explain it and you show it on videos in such a way that you put together this ecological system that just, so explain that to people, how it kind of takes care of itself. Yeah. And also get into, you know, someone having just a quarter of an acre versus 2 acres, because that's important.
Yeah. It's so, so great. So that's why I'm in Minnesota. One of the reasons I grew up here, my mom is from here, and I got a bunch of friends here. And I also came here to video all of the food forests around the cities. In fact, we drove up yesterday to Duluth, Minnesota, where my buddy Chad Johnson has, he's got about 30 acres, but he's got an intense permaculture food forest on about 5 acres. And this food forest has over 300 different species of edible and medicinal plants growing on the property. Wow. And he started about 5-6 years ago to really stack all of the different plants. Right now, I asked him yesterday, I said, what would happen if you walked away from this property and let it be for 10 years? He said, it would expand for miles out into the forest because it already is. So what I'm saying is a food forest can be absolutely zero maintenance and continuously provide more and more and more food.
That's incredible. Incredible. And so if someone's in, you know, a home that has an eighth to a quarter of an acre versus 2 acres, like what would that look like? Tell us like some of the plants and how those plants can kind of feed one another to help take care of the whole system. So it's not, because I think some people get overwhelmed by the idea of how much upkeep and work they're going to have to do.
That is the ultimate BS, right? It's a belief system that's programmed by the same people that are intending to program the minds of the people, right? It's the easiest thing in the world. Our average backyard design is probably a 10th of an acre. And in a permaculture design, we mimic nature. That's what permaculture is. It's observing and interacting with natural systems and then asking the question, okay, if we design this plant here, and we stack them so they're all functional plants, we start underground with the roots and tubers and then go to the herbaceous layer. We just did an interview with a friend, Jerry, today, who's got 5 different kinds of mushrooms growing in the forest near his house. And then you go up to the smaller shrubs and the smaller berry bushes, up to the smaller fruit trees and the bigger fruit trees. So you've actually got 7 layers of food growing in the same vertical space.
Nice. Now, what about watering systems? Do you work with, you know, irrigation or rainwater, or which of course some states don't let you do that, but we won't get into that.
Yeah. So water is like job one. The first thing we look at is how is the plant going to survive, especially the first 18 months. The first month is the most critical, and then it goes on and on and on. Until about 18 months, most plants are completely established, even the longer lasting, bigger, slower growing fruit trees and nut trees. So we say, okay, where are the water sources? And then we stack them. So most houses don't have rainwater collection off the roof, but it's the simplest and most logical thing. I just capture that rain, separate it. They've got gutters that are specially made for this. Put some in a big barrel, right? That's the first layer. The second layer would be to have a pond. Right? If you can stack that along with a pond is an incredible resource, because now you can have a little aeration and you can have fish. Now you don't even need aeration if you have a lot of plants in there. But now when you, in fact, at Galt's Landing, we have a 6-acre pond. We just put aeration in because it's a brand new pond. And all along the pond, we have edible water plants. In the pond, next week, we're putting 7 different species of fish. And then we're taking the water from the pond and we're fertigating the food forest around the pond. Fertigation is to fertilize and irrigate at the same time. And check this out. This is the ultimate cherry on top. We have strawberry guava trees and sea grape trees all along the one edge, and mulberry, and about 30 or 40 different types of food growing along the edge of the pond. When that food drops into the pond, it becomes fish food.
Nice. Tell us more about Galt Landing, what you're doing. It's 52 acres, right?
Before we do that, can I have a question if I can? Jim, do you have to prep? So the soil, there's some soils that have more, they're more nutrient rich than others. Do you do like a soil analysis of an area first to kind of get an idea of the nutrients? Do you have to sometimes supplement those for certain locations, or is it all like hydroponics to where you just kind of put your nutrients right in the sort of in the hydroponic solution so you don't have to worry about that? Is that something that you come across?
Great question, James. So most of the time we do recommend a soil study. Now, no matter what, we always build soil. Soil is like the immune system of the whole planet. When your soil is rich in diversity and nutrients, then the plants are very healthy, and then they don't get attacked by the animals and the creatures and the funguses, right? That's what disease and dis-ease is in the human body. It's the same process. So we build soil no matter where we are. At Galt's Landing, we had to build up one of the areas to be out of what's technically considered wetlands. And so we took that material from the pond, and we dug the pond. It's 27 feet deep. That material went to cover and raise up everything by about 7 feet. So what we had was inert sand. It was just no life in this at all. I mean, there's life in it, but it would have taken years. So to speed up time, we ordered loads and loads and loads of black good soil. And we mixed it with mushroom composting soil, and we mixed it with a small amount of fertilizer. We also do what's called compost tea brewing. We have a 50-gallon barrel, and we put a compost tea bag in there, like a big cup of tea, and then we bubble that water for 24 hours. In the Florida heat, it's about 80-degree water plus. So within 24 hours, it's loaded with good bacteria. Then we pour that good bacteria on the roots of the plant, and they absolutely love it. So in literally in the last 6 months, we've taken a patch of sand, and it is now probably 300 fruit trees and over 1,000 different plants growing on the sand.
Wow. Incredible. Incredible.
Wow. I would like to live on that 52 acres, please.
Yeah. It's a miraculous thing that happened, in my opinion, because I went to this about 4 years ago. We were looking to buy a piece of land to have two houses. But we thought, oh, if we could have five houses, we could sell a couple of lots and get some neighbors. Well, I went to all the realtors and all the people in the area, and I said, we would like a lake. We would like pasture land. And then we would like a runway, or the ability to have a runway, because my buddy's a pilot. And they all laughed at me. Every single one of them said, that's not possible in this area, because we wanted it to be within an hour of the Orlando International Airport, because he was a pilot, right? And they laughed. I get a call 2 weeks later, and the guy goes, Jim, I can't believe this, but a property just popped up that has a 430-acre private lake. We've got the only dock on the lake. It's at the end of a road, and it's got a mile-long paved runway on the east coast of it.
Wow. Amazing. That's the universe working for you.
You know what? That's the key. There's whatever the mind of man or woman can conceive and believe it can achieve. That's a true statement.
Yes, absolutely. So now walk me through it. Let's say I was to go purchase a home on a quarter or half acre. And I said, because when I do get land, I'm definitely calling you. And I said, okay, so now I want you guys, you have a team of permaculturists, right? And I want you guys to help me with, designing this for my property. So how does the process start exactly for the blueprint stage of it?
Yeah, awesome question, Corey Lynn. So it starts with a conversation. Once somebody decides and purchases the blueprint, then one of our designers, and we've got 45 of the most incredible people around the world who make a living by studying and then designing freedom into the landscape. Greg Nibbs, who toured with Bill Mollison 40 years ago, is collaborating with us on a mega design. And the first things we ask the customer, whether it be a suburban homeowner or a major community or an HOA or even a political campaign, we design all of these things because it's all permanent culture. And so we say, what are your goals? What is your vision? What do you want to do? And then they tell us what they want to do. And here's where it gets crazy fun. When we share with them what's possible, it's mind-blowing. It's eye-opening. It expands the potential. I'll give you an example. This fella today, his name is Jerry. And in southern Minnesota, we went to his place, and he's an epic grower. Mushrooms are his specialty, and canning and preserving food is another specialty. So I said, how about this? Why don't we turn your property into a showcase, into an education center? He's around 70 years old, and he doesn't want to be farming in the dirt all the day because he's kind of doing it some of the traditional way. And so why don't we turn your property into an educational center, and we'll get our teams to come up and we'll collaborate and we'll show people how to can and store food and how to do mushrooms and then how to design and install a permaculture landscape. And he's like, boom, he can make thousands of dollars per month simply by hosting this. Right. That's what our design does. Most people simply want to design their landscapes beautifully, so their HOA approves of it, which it always happens when it's beautiful. And that's what we love to do as well.
So then what do you send in photos so that you have, or do you guys come out, or do you send in photos and then you kind of work from there and start drawing up what it is the person has in mind?
Yes. So it starts with a conversation where we gather the info. Photos and video of the land are the most important things. along with what does the customer want. And then we also do the Google Earth and then a survey or measurements. So because the designs are very detailed. Yeah. Like you can see that's before the install. And then if you go to that other picture, that's after. Like on the right there, that's a Chinese medicine herb spiral. And every direction has a different color and a different type of medicine in that spiral. And the kind of the piece in the middle is a vineyard. You can do over 300 to 500 bottles per wine per year out of that vineyard. Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That's really cool.
Yeah. So we design all that stuff. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Keep going. Incredible. Keep going. Wait. Yeah. We should tell people that you have to, you're at your friend in Minnesota. And so we have his name Travis is showing up on there, but this is Jim Gill, everyone.
Yes,
and Travis works with you, right?
Yeah, he's a co-founder with me of the company, and so I'm at his house.
Gotcha. Okay, so then, what about the install part of it? So let's say, okay, I want to have these types of edible trees and plants, and I want a little medicinal garden, and maybe I want to do a little koi pond. Okay, you get that drawn up. Now, am I working with installers locally, or do you guys have people that you connect with?
So this is the most exciting business model in the world today. It's the Food Forest Cooperative, Food Forest Abundance Cooperative. It's basically, well, I'll give you a little backstory. So when I started the mortgage company at about 30 years old, I didn't like the way that the mortgage industry operated, and I didn't know anything about mortgages. So I just thought outside the box. I'm like, why do it this way? Why don't we do it this way? Everybody wins if we do it this particular way. So we created a mission to serve our loan officers. And so all of the designers and all the basically people internally were like, let's serve the loan officers. The loan officers are the people that are out in the field putting food in the ground. And that's what we're all about. So we went from zero to $1.3 billion in sales, grew from zero to 480 loan officers in 3 years, basically.
Wow. And
so that's the model that I've taken over here and said, okay, our designers are the most amazing and intelligent people. They're the detail people. And they are the ones who take the time with the customer to go through every square foot of the backyard and say, this plant would go here, this plant, and this is how much soil you'll need, this is how much mulch you'll need, and all this. And then we send that to the cooperative. Now, a cooperative is like a landscaping business, except for it's freedomscaping, it's foodscaping. And the cooperative is the one with a small crew, 2 to 3 people usually, they'll install the food forest. So we've got one of the fastest growing cooperatives in the world. We've been from zero to 140 cooperative partners in just 14 months.
That's incredible. Well, one of your members, I don't know if he wants me to say his name or not, so I'll just say Scott. Thank you, Scott. He's the one who connected me with you. And then I watched the interview you did with Del Big Tree and how you actually went out to his property and built a little food forest for him. That was very cool.
Yes.
So tell us
and
about
thank you, Scott. Thunderclap.
You had this event on the 4th that you live streamed. Tell us how that one went.
Oh my gosh. It was mind-blowing for me personally, because it was all of my heroes, the people who I respect most in this industry, Greg Nibbs and David Holmgren, the founder of permaculture, and Joel Salatin, America's most loved farmer, at least for the ethical people around the world, right?
Yeah, I'd like to get Joel on at some point.
all these guys, they're amazing. And Joel, I mean, he has shown raising animals, cows and pigs and chickens, can be done in such a way that radically increases the profit margin per acre, that creates way more jobs and builds soil all at the same time. So it's literally a way of using natural design systems to build life in every way. It's abundance creating, right? So that model is one that we're exposing to the world. And he's already put, in fact, he has TED Talks where he even speaks to the carbon footprint narrative, which I realize is a control narrative. But the fact that we even solve that narrative, that's going to blow people's minds because this is the idea whose time has come, right? So, and then Dr. Andy Wakefield, I mean, the courage, this guy is one of the most genuine, courageous guys I've ever met. And Sayer G and Darren Olean and John and Christine Nolan from Inspired. So all of us came together, and even Paul Check was there, and so many more. So all of us came together, and we talked about the solutions to what's going on right now. So in fact, Sayer G, it just asked me for the film of it. It's a 3-hour, basically, it's a live stream that we basically compacted down to 3 hours out of 12 and a half hours of content. And so anyway, we're going to send this out. It's going to go out to millions. It's going to change the world.
Well, if that is so, is that going to be available public for everyone to watch?
Everyone, everything we
Definitely
do is
send me the
public.
link, because we'll put it out and share it for sure. So
Awesome.
you've said, so on a if you're on a quarter acre with a home, if it's done right with the food forest and that, the edible plants, how much can that food feed a family in, in a year's time, say?
There are models in the world now that produce 6,000 acres on a tenth of an, I mean, 6,000 pounds of food on a tenth of an acre that feed a family and make money on a tenth of an acre. So a quarter acre is a, like, and that's more of a farm to market situation, but even just a permaculture food forest, a quarter acre, you can have well over 100 different species of food. You can have, three or four dozen fruit trees and berry bushes and roots and tubers. So you could get easily a meal to a meal and a half, even 2 meals per day out of a quarter acre food forest.
So, can I ask you a
Okay.
question on this? So, it sounds like there's great abundance. A lot of food would be left over, let's say, for example. Do you encourage like a freeze drying? Is there all the can all this be canned, a frozen and vacuum sealed, let's say, for example? Is that something that I'm sure that's probably practiced often? Is it what is it canning more, or is it more freezing it, or what do people do with the abundance typically?
So it completely depends on what type of food and what their goals are. Canning is fantastic. It's so simple to can, right? You heat some up, you put the lid on and make sure the seal is good. And as it cools, it pops in. And now you've got something that you can put on your shelf for years. That's the number one way. Dehydrate, whether it's through an electric dehydrator or what's called a solar turbo dehydrator, which is just a matter of plexiglass in a black box. Where the air comes in, it heats up, and then you have a cage with racks. That dehydration process is awesome. I did that in Costa Rica. I turned a whole shipping container into a big dehydration system. So it's really important and wonderful to learn how to preserve food.
That's awesome. Or if you're in a community setting, like you were saying with other goals, then everyone can be sharing with one another. And speaking of community, don't you also, aren't you working with like schools and other places to try and do this in public settings as well?
Big time. My favorite thing, the thing that will change the world more than any other one thing at scale, is putting food forest education centers at schools. You can teach every class from economics to I mean, all of it. You can teach all of it through a food forest. A food forest is an abundance factory, right? So I imagine, I mean, for instance, a food forest is a nursery. By its very nature, it produces more so that those nursery plants can be grafted and propagated in such a way where a food forest like that could produce tens of thousands of dollars worth of value to the community or to the school per month.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. So now, are your members, are they approaching, public places in their areas as well, like in throughout various states?
We're right on the edge. So the pioneers have been doing this forever. The early adopters are going up like a rocket ship right now because of the need in our society. The food supply chain is in big, big trouble. And so people are becoming aware of that, and they're starting to ask new questions. We are right on the tip of mass adoption. I've heard this number that somewhere around 9.2 to 9.6%. When it hits that and it's a good idea, it's done. It's mass adoption. We are probably 3 to 6 months away, maybe 12 months on the outskirt from mass adoption of growing food. And we are positioned to help in a lot of ways.
Well, and speaking of help, I looked under, I might have to actually take one of your courses. So tell us about, because you have a, what is it exactly? Are they courses or are you actually learning and getting certified as a permaculturist or what all is involved with this?
So all of the above. Education is at the core of our business. Alan Campbell, our partner and amazing educator, he came aboard and him and his wife are already doing this. So I'm like, oh my gosh, we need that. And then Katie and Dr. Andrew and all these other people, we're all educators. So we educate. In fact, we just wrote a book. Thanks to John Wright and Charles Lawson and many other people, we just wrote a book. The down and dirty about growing food at home or something like that. It literally, it just came out like yesterday and it took us a month and it's the simplest thing. There's like 12 or so different how to grow potatoes, how to grow microgreens at home, how to, and it's like 2 to 3 pages each. So to answer your question, yes, we're all about educating in any way that makes sense.
I love that. I love that. It's such a well-rounded, thought-out program that you've implemented. So kudos for that. I have a question regarding fertilizers. Are you working towards trying to move away from fertilizers, or how are you handling the fertilizer situation?
So in permaculture, we'll design fertilization into the system. There are certain green chop and drop plants. Like in some places, you put a moringa tree up, and when the leaves fall, they're loaded with nutrients. You put comfrey on the ground, and that becomes a fertilizer. Chickens are the number one, though. There's nothing better for a food forest than 4 chickens or so, depending on the size, of course. They eat a lot of the bugs. They eat, and of course they defecate, and they create just the perfect environment as long as they're used properly, right? You can let chickens go in the garden for one day, and the plants won't be bothered at all, but there'll be no more bugs. You let them go for 3 days, and there's no more plants or bugs.
That's
that
a good point.
That's
That's
interesting.
funny.
I hadn't even thought about that with chickens, because that was one of the things I was going to ask you. What do you know? How are you handling bugs and pests and whatnot? So, because I know, for example, this is silly. So I'm in a townhome right now, and I have this tiny little section on the side of my house where I can grow. And I decided to start trying to grow some foods I've never grown before. And I tried acorn squash, which was absolutely delicious. The vines grow like crazy. I had not realized how long these were going to get. But then, about halfway through the growth process, when the other ones started growing, all of a sudden, all the leaves start turning white and powdery. And I'm like, oh no, what do I do?
Now,
So,
there's
how do you combat stuff like that?
so here's how you comment. You take a picture or a 10-second video of the leaves curling or drying or any mildew or anything. You throw it on one of our websites, like at our on Telegram, Food Forest Abundance, and you say, what's happening and how do I solve this? And within usually minutes, somebody will answer saying, this is what's happening and this is how to solve. Isn't that cool?
That's very cool. So now, so that's on Telegram and then of course foodforestabundance.com and any other places people can find you on that you want to talk
Pretty
about.
much everywhere. The ones that I want to get away from, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, we're on those, but they're also good, ways to get out there. But then we're also going, Telegram's a good one, and we're going to be going everywhere. Thrive Solutions, Foster Gamble's new one. He's one of our collaborators, an amazing human being. And so is Sayer G's new one, Unite. These are going to be very much decentralized platforms of free speech.
Okay, so let me ask you this. If someone needed to do this in phases, so let's say they're on a tight budget, so they want to start with the design and work with you on getting information on that part, but then maybe they're only going to start with just a couple plants and they're going to, so when they do get the talk with you and get the blueprint, what kind of information comes with that that will help people to understand? I mean, does it give them just the drawing, or is it going to lay out like, this is how you want to plant it, or this is how you want to do the soil.
It's going to lay all of it. So it's about a 45-page document, and within the document is the custom design. and it'll basically give every single plant where it goes. It'll give the layers of usually sheet mulching and soil and wood chips and very much details about exactly what they are. And then it'll give a list of every plant, sometimes by code, and where they are. Some plants like more shade, some plants like full sun. Some, you know, there's all these different kind of combinations, and it'll, that's what kind of permaculture design is. So
gotcha. Yes, that's awesome. That's a wealth of information. I'm definitely doing it, Jim.
Awesome.
As soon as I get some land.
Yeah. It's the way
now,
to go.
Now, what about like where James is at in Montana? I'm just, you know, they have such a shorter growing season. So do you ever suggest like greenhouses or like you had mentioned before, what was it you were doing in the shipping container?
Oh, yeah. I've done all sorts of stuff like that. There's nothing better as far as ROI on every level than soil using natural systems. But in some cases, greenhouses are great. Chad's place up in northern Minnesota, which is probably about the same as Montana as far as zone, is 300 different species. It's epic. So my point is yes, it can be done. It might be, James, is it pretty dry where you are? Or
yeah, it's pretty dry. Yeah, it's pretty dry. Okay. I mean, not this year. It flooded out, almost flooded. But normally, yes, it's pretty dry, generally.
Well, then what we do, the first thing we do, swales. Swales are ditches on contour that slow and sink and spread the water so that your land becomes a watery bank, like a battery full of agua. And that's one of the most important things in land that's kind of arid and dry.
I have a question for you. We talked about areas like I'm in Montana. You know, there's a whole lot of malls that are out of business and sitting vacant. Is this something that you perceive perhaps when this does sort of hit a momentum phase where some of those old buildings and like malls, because they're perfectly set up, they're all compartmentalized. You can put different species in each one of the little cubbies, whatever you want to call it, little storefronts. Is that something you think in the future we may actually utilize some of that space, or do you want to keep it outside pretty much?
Oh, it's a no-brainer to use that space. Those are the greenhouses that are already built in. And when you create this type of system in a mall, I've been actually thinking about this exact thing for so many years. When you create one of these systems in a mall, you can use the roof of the mall to either do solar or solar evacuated tubes. You could heat water in these tubes, and you can have a cycle where the water goes down, this warm water. So in other words, because heating and air conditioning a mall is their biggest expense, right? It's incredible resource. So you could do it in a way where you capture and store the energy using natural systems, because you don't have to have it be 72 degrees all the time, right? It can swing from 45 to 95 or whatever, but you just don't want it to go below, let's say, 32. So in other words, it would not only create an incredible place to grow these plants, but now it would bring life back to the mall and people would want to go to the mall again.
That would be so cool. And yeah, now my mind's going on. I'm picturing these little edible bars and you got your smoothies outside here, just using the herbs right from the little shop.
It'd be indoor paradise, like such a paradise that people are like, oh my God, let's go to the mall. Right?
And tremendous opportunity for training as well, because you could have each stage could be another storefront, and you could actually run groups through there and train them how to do it themselves at their own place. So it's got tremendous opportunities, I think. And it's wasted space. It's sitting there right now just being heated, and people are just – it's wasted. It's millions and millions and millions of empty cubic feet of mall space right now.
I think the training aspect to this is really vital too, because I think it's intimidating to a lot of people because we've been so conditioned to think that it's so much work and it's so difficult, and it's probably because the way we were doing it, and we weren't, you know, like I remember in the interview you did with Dell, and when you were planting over on his property, what were the little beans you guys were inserting that was going to like help with the soil or something?
They were legumes, different types of bean, bush bean and pea, anything that's leguminous, which it fixes nitrogen in the soil. So that's good to have all over the place. Like we got bags and bags, these 50-pound bags at Gulf's Landing, and we just threw them everywhere. And we're harvest some of them, but it's not about that. It's about letting that nutrient go into the soil.
See, and it's stuff like that that's so important that the average person who's wanting to start growing food isn't familiar with all these right. little tips and tricks. And so I think the training is a really good idea, like taking that just across the country and showing people and really kind of hands-on. I love it. Love it.
Yeah. I've got a cool business model to share with you. Right now, we're adding another layer to our model. We're doing these million-dollar food forest education centers on public-facing land. These could be at schools, at churches, at community centers, in parks. And each one of them becomes its own abundance factory, its own kind of nursery and teaching center to teach everything we're talking about, how to prepare food, how to graft trees, how to create new plants. And you could do literally tens of thousands of dollars per month out of every one of these nurseries. And all of the community members can now have easier access to healthy food. It's a win on many, many levels. So if anybody wants to be in that business with us, let's do it, because it's a no-brainer, especially right now.
Yeah, absolutely right now. I mean, we need to be planting as much edible food as we can with you know, their little agendas they're rolling out here. And we yeah. see, you know, what's happening over in the Netherlands and whatnot. And I don't want to get into the negative stuff, but it is. It's very important. This is an exciting thing, but I think it's also a necessity. It's yeah. it's absolutely necessary to be doing this. So
it sure is. I was just talking to a friend the other day and she was saying, you know, you're freaking out about what's going on. I'm like, I'm not freaking out at all. Winter is coming and it's time to prepare and store food for winter. It's not a freak out thing. It's just a knowing thing.
Right.
I've actually never been more alive in my life. I've never been more focused in my life. I've never felt better in my life. So it's not freak out. It's awareness. Very different.
Right.
What's been the response from the elected officials? You know, because the general thought and the people in that class is they don't want the folks to be self-sufficient. They want the dependency chain to continue. Have you found that the public officials and people, elected officials, I should say, have they been sort of positive? Generally speaking, overall, are they behind you?
So I have a fun story about that. About a month and a half ago, this guy, Chris Messina, he's running for Orange County mayor. They have a $5.5 billion annual budget and, you know, Disney and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I called a meeting, and his campaign managers, Michelle and Chris Page, they are both Harvard and Yale law degrees, and Chris is a Harvard law. And for 30 minutes, I pitched them on a campaign strategy that would win the election. And they were like, oh, at the end of this 30 minutes, and they completely evolved their campaign strategy. And the campaign strategy is this: for anybody out there running for office, we have the strategy that will win you all of the ethical Republican votes. It'll win you all of the ethical independent votes, and it will suck over a bunch of Democrats. I know that sounds impossible, but I'll share it with you right now. Using the people's resources wisely. That's the strategy. And how? The more specific and detailed you get, the more you see how real this is. When we take out the poisons in our communities and supplant those poisons with food. So in other words, we take the same budget that you're already spending that is going into land management, and we actually plant food producing crops in all of our city parks, on all of the fences and all of our city centers, and we make food free. That solves all of the narratives that both sides pretend that they care about.
Right, right. And we put more oxygen in the air, and look at how much more carbon that will be absorbing.
Bees, plastics, landfills, health, wellness, cancer, diabetes, heart disease. We can make a direct link between what I'm talking about and the solution of these problems. We can actually correlate this and show very directly that this strategy will end deforestation.
And it's so beautiful too, because even though we know the whole carbon emissions thing is absurd, they can't argue with you on this because you're playing right into it. It's perfect. Yes.
Isn't it fun? It's like, challenge me, dude. You know, did I tell the Apple story here yet today?
No, I don't believe so.
No.
Okay. So Apple, all right. Apple, big Apple, right? $2 trillion entity, Apple. Apple, right. If you really care about humanity, then I have an investment idea for you. You invest 5% of your net worth, which is $100 billion. With $100 billion, you could put 100,000 $1 million food forest education centers around the world. That would radically change the world. And it would create a healthier population. And by the way, health and education are the two things that lead to population balance. The idea of that we have overpopulation is insane. We do not have a population problem. We have a use of resources problem. And that starts at the very top. So Apple, you want to do something good for the world? Follow this strategy and help us create food freedom everywhere, and you will make more money. If that's your goal, then this will help you make more money.
Let me paint a mental picture for a second here. So if you got a community that's involved in the abundance, the forestation, the abundance, the edible forest, you literally could have a walking path in that community where you could be walking with your wife after dinner and reach down and grab something off a bush and just eat it. Like, right. I mean, it's ready to go. Is it that type of scenario we're talking about?
It's like walking through the Garden of Eden. It's like walking where there's just literally food growing. I can walk at Gulf's Landing. I can stand in certain spots and I can have 5 different types of food in 3 steps.
That's awesome. And they did what's it called? Like edible landscapes or something over, was it in Europe? And they actually had people come in and do tours where they would walk through and everything. So, I mean, it's been done and it's worked well. So I this is fantastic. And congratulations.
Yeah, yes. It's not a hypothetical. It's a proven fact. And we demonstrate that it's a proven fact. Right? Which is a lot of fun. Okay, debate me. You know, Warren Buffett, you just said you're going to give $97 billion to Bill Gates. I got another idea for you. Do you really want to leave a legacy? Because if you want to leave a legacy, you can radically change the world by installing 97,000 food forest education centers around the world with that amount of resource.
Yep. Well, we know that's not his goal, but but your goal makes the best argument possible because you can show how sustainable it is and it's regenerative and it solves all their so-called issues.
You know how if you build a community, you have a spec house, let's say, for example, right, where people come and look at the spec house. Do you have any type of scenario where you have like a spec garden where you can bring people in and show them sort of the possibilities and they can take that and they can adapt it to their own environment?
All over the world we have those. Yes, there are those. The Permaculture Network has been doing this for 50 years. And even before them, there have been wise people that have been doing this. We are 14 months old and we've got them all over the world, just our entity. But permaculture, that's what we're about, is collaborating. So yes, we absolutely do.
Well, and aren't you building something on Galt's Landing there, on the property there, where people can come there as well?
Yes, we have tours. It's Galt's Walk. And we give tours and we have planted, we are using our fence and our pond, and these are different designers, right? And then we've got Syntropic Agroforestry in several locations. We've got this incredible food forest coming up. Like, I don't even know how many fruit trees there are now. There's like at least 200 different varieties of edible plants growing already. It's absolutely beautiful.
I saw in a video you had done, I don't know how recent it is, but on the property there, and you were walking past the sweet potatoes and you grabbed a leaf off and you ate it. And I said, well, gosh, I didn't know that. You can eat like every part of a sweet potato plant.
Yep.
So many things I need to learn.
And it's fun. I'm learning every day. It's so fun. I watch the wasps so people say, what about bugs, right? What about insects? Well, when you have diversity, that's the strength. When you have a monocrop, that's the problem. because you've got an infestation there that's just going to ravage everything and populate to the trillions. In our, my farm gardens, you've got a bug will attack one thing. And pretty soon, here come the spiders and the wasps and the geckos. And all of a sudden, that bug is halfway through the plant. And now there's a spider web and a bunch of wasps and geckos that are eating all the bugs. Like, they're our frontline colonels and generals are the animals.
What about, I see some people do like bat houses or bird, yeah, you know, bird feeders and whatnot to kind of help with that. But even with that, it's like the placement of it. And that's why I think the design aspect is so critical. Cause if you're going to put the work into it and get this going, you want to do it right out the gate.
That's right. Bat boxes are fantastic for a multitude of reasons. They're the number one predator of the mosquito. Dragonflies, you plant certain types of plants and the dragonflies lay their larvae in those plants. More dragonflies you have, the better. And then possums. Possums are the wood tick's number one killer, right? And so we possum boxes all over. They also kill snakes. You know, I've got a three-year-old and a little dog. And the dog's also a snake dog, right? But possums are the number one. They actually kill even poisonous snakes.
I did not know that. I once rescued a baby possum out of a garbage can. He was stuck.
Awesome.
Well, that is incredible. I'm trying to think. Do we have any follow-up questions? Anything else we want to make sure we don't miss that you can get out to people?
I would think, go ahead. What would be the first thing that people that watch this video, what's the first thing? Because, you know, people have very different levels of experience when it comes to gardening. Let's say you're talking with just a total novice that never has even put a pair of gardening gloves on before, all the way up to someone that's built gardens, let's say, in their backyard every year. Where's the first starting point for someone that just really wants to get going tomorrow, let's say, for example?
The first starting point is to decide to grow food. And there are infinite different ways how to. If you want to learn it, you can literally go on YouTube and you can put in your best type, your favorite types of food. And then you can go to the grocery store and you can go with $20 and you find the organic section and you find your favorite foods. And then you grab those, you buy them, you eat them, but you save the seeds while you're eating them. Maybe tomatoes or cucumbers or apples or whatever, right? Then take the seeds out, go on YouTube and say, how do I propagate these seeds? And now you've just started your own garden for no money out of pocket, right? That's one extreme. If you want to speed up time, then you can get a hold of us at foodforestabundance.com and you can get a design. You can work with one of our designers. And either way, we would love to have you join our Telegram at Food Forest Abundance or our mailing list at foodforestabundance.com. And we'll continuously share more inspired ideas and wisdom about people from all over the world using different techniques to grow food. And if you want to be in the business, if you're an entrepreneur or a gardener or a grower or a landscaper, and you want to add this incredible opportunity for yourself and your family, your community, then join us in the Food Forest Cooperative. It's awesome.
I love it.
You know, my final thought for me is, why don't they adopt this? And you see these commercials on television where people in these third world countries are starving, their stomachs are all distended because they don't have any food. Why not just, why not just move this somewhere to one of these places and just feed these folks, for crying out loud?
Yeah, we have farms right now, and there are many that, when I say we, just in our network that we are actually helping to design and implement, and then in the permaculture network in general, these are happening all over the world right now.
Great.
Like, we've got this is a bunch in Africa. We just got a big design in Chiang Rai, Thailand, and Tao, and all these different countries. And it's amazing because every one of them become a demonstration center for what's possible. And this spreads because when people see it, they have to have it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Wow. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Definitely good stuff. And get me the link to the video when you share that from the event, because I'd like to get that out to people as well. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was fantastic information for people.
Great information. Great information, Jim. And
thank you both so much. I appreciate you. When you're ready for your own designs, let us know and we'll do something real special like we do for everybody.
My hat's off to you. Great. My hat's off to you and your work. Thanks so much. Okay, folks, right. That's the end of the interview. I'm your host, James White, along with my co-host, Corey Lynn. This has been the Solution Series brought to you by the Solara Report. And please join us next time for the next Solara Report. Until then, this is James White for Corey Lynn and our guest, Jim Gale, saying bye now.
Here are my top 10 reasons for growing food instead of lawns. Number one, it's easy. Perennial edible landscapes, what we like to call food forests, are easier to grow and maintain than an American lawn. And the abundance that you can have out of your own backyard is absolutely incredible. Take one peach tree, for example. A peach tree can produce 150 pounds of peaches per year, every year for generations. Now, add 20 or 30 different types of food producers, berry bushes and grapevines and other fruit trees, and you can have tens of thousands of healthy snacks produced in your own yard every year. And folks, the food supply chain is radically unsustainable. Some say it's in process of collapse right now. How do we reverse this, and how do we take control? By growing food instead of lawns. And the taste and nutrient density of fruits and veggies that are picked off the vine or off the tree are much better because they don't sit on grocery store shelves and they're not picked before they are ripe. Mother Nature knows what she's doing. Anxiety and stress are more common now than ever, and gardening has found to be as effective to alleviate these ailments as prayer and meditation. When we transform 30% of our 40 million acres of lawn in the United States to food forests, we will reverse deforestation and thereby reverse mass extinction. We are in the sixth great mass extinction right now, and this is because of the poisons and monocultures that we use to grow food. The UN, permaculturalists, and farmers around the world are saying that we are mining and poisoning our topsoil at a rate of 10 to 40 times the rate of replenishment. In fact, the UN said we only have 60 years of topsoil left. How do we reverse this trend? By using our lawns, our yards, to grow food. Disease is the result of the poisons we consume on a daily basis. Everything from pesticides to illusory fast foods. With food forests, we eliminate these poisons from our diet, and we so eliminate a major factor in disease. And my friends, all paths to freedom must include a decentralized, poison-free, and regenerative food supply.